information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
We are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the new world order. Welcome, my friends, to episode 123 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 15th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. This week, news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, all the classic and current catastrophes, war games, terror drills, biolabs, plus Air Force One, updates on Flight 3407, ghosts of administrations past and present, Tillman, torture, and Bilderberg 2009. It's all here, May 15th, 2009, episode 123 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Operation, I need some hibernation. Hide me from the evil. Protect me from the vultures, the men and the women drink. And my children, they need some hibernation to hide them from the evil. Protect them from the
Escaping contamination is a difficult operation, my friends. That's a little-known Brit rock from a band called JJ72. And it's a good way, a good raucous way, to kick off episode 123 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 15th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, coming to you live every Friday morning, as always, at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, simulcast 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Saturday mornings at 8 Pacific Time, thanks to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, and also boulderfreeradio.org, KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, and thanks to Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Those are just some of the ways you can hear the show. You can get in touch with me, and each week, a few more people, a few more ways. Folks I've never met, hit me up on Instant Messenger or Facebook or what have you. It's all about the networking. FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Yes, you know it. So I just did, just a little bit ago, the B-side of episode 122, a little quickie episode because I knew I wasn't going to be able to cram in all the crazy, catastrophic news that we've got to cover here in episode 123. Glancing as we do to the breaking news on this 15th of May morning, GM, of course, to shed 1,100 dealers today. Pelosi versus the CIA. She loses. And, of course, Obama decides to try some detainees before military commissions. The first of many flip-flops we're going to hit on this episode. And, again, we're nonpartisan. Both major parties are completely corrupt and controlled. They lean up against each other. Every 4 years, you throw the bums out and bring some other bums in, but you never look behind the curtain and see the connections. There's definitely a conspiracy. There's just not a lot of theories. We've got their papers. We've got the things that you're not supposed to read. You're supposed to pay attention to American Idol. You're not supposed to read boring books by Zbigniew Brzezinski called The Grand Chessboard. But it's an attack on all levels. Of course, sometimes how can you blame somebody for not investigating this shit? They and their spouse each have to work jobs for increasingly lower wages and benefits. And the kids and the cars and all the bullshit. They just want to come home, turn on, tune in, sack out, and shut up. That time is rapidly escaping us. And the time of sitting on the fence, that window's closing. You may have always, you know, or at least for the last several years, had this little feeling in your gut that shit ain't right. What I try and do with MediaMonarchy.com is use all kinds of sources, mainstream, alternative, left, right, up, down, to give you, and of course myself, more information, more education to make better informed decisions about your life and the lives of those you love. So I'm done running my mouth on that. Let's blast through the 5:15 news purge, an ugly list of headlines. Not to diminish the importance of all these stories, there's just so much going on, I can't cover it all in detail. So we'll hit the 9/11 updates first. Additions to the amazing, complete 9/11 timeline on historycommons.org as of May 10th. New entries on the 9/11 Commission, Karl Rove, and Government Minders. We've got the director of the indie film, Abel Danger, talking about fascism, Bush, and the DIY ethic up on IndieWire.com. The National Intelligence Examiner wonders about the Pentagon's missile defense failure. So again, regular mainline people going, hey, yeah, what's the deal with that? Oh, and big news. Inbred elites, Prince Harry, coming to New York City to visit 9/11 victims on his first overseas engagement. They've got to come see the site. So we've got reports from Hindu.com, the Boston Herald, and the Associated Press, all on Prince Harry coming. The coming of Prince William, that's another subject. We noted, I believe, last week that, of course, the Statue of Liberty's crown is going to reopen on July 4th, and it's been closed since, wouldn't you know it, 9/11. There's a video and an article there for you. Another one from the Seattle Exopolitics Examiner. Lots of strange articles from the Examiner family of writers. And I give you this just to flesh things out further. I don't endorse every link or every article I put up here. It's all to give you the wider spectrum. Evidence shows 9/11 false flag op may have been hyper-dimensional event. That's not the first I've heard of things like that, but it may be new to you. Tread lightly. But under geopolitics, Pentagon official charged in leak of classified info to China. We've got CNN and Washington Post on that. Pentagon employee charged with espionage. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Assassination plot against Chavez foiled. That's from Press TV. Somali pirates guided by London intelligence team. That is from The Guardian. Not from some crazy conspiracy blogger. That's from arguably the biggest paper in the UK. Pointing out Somali pirates guided by London intelligence. We generally note anytime there are big orchestrated events in the military entertainment complex, there's usually intelligence involved. That's how it goes off so big and so bold. U.S. will pay $2.6 million to train Chinese prostitutes to drink responsibly on the job. That's from CNSNews.com. You can't make this up. A nice video of Netanyahu and an article from Consortium News, AIPAC, and their dubious calls for peace. We've got the DOD joining the CIA's drone war in Pakistan. That's from Wired. And finally, another video and another article, this time from Global Research, but again, the video from The Real News. NATO exercises provoke Russia. Are we going to see another summer of provocative actions? But under history mystery, a nice little blast from the past, New York Times documenting the military role in the theft of the 2000 election. CIA knew the Bay of Pigs op was unachievable before they even launched it. That's from CQPolitics.com, coming from, I believe, conversations on a book with Ted Sorensen, ex-JFK aide. And we don't have time to get into anything about the Bay of Pigs right now. The latest hoax book on the JFK assassination, that's by way of Alex Constantine. Alan Stafford may have been a U.S. government informer. This by way of Cryptogon. And this is a story recently. Just a quick bit for you. Evidence has emerged that the Texan who bankrolled English cricket may have been a U.S. government informer. Sir Alan Stanford, who is accused of bank fraud, is also the subject of an investigation by the BBC's Panorama. So we've got links to BBC, and again, all by way of Cryptogon.com. Banksters, insiders, government informants, revolving doors that we've noted before. From the Washington Times, as well as PrinceGeorgeCitizen.com, a couple notes on John Demjanjuk. That's the guy who just got yanked out of Ohio, sent back to Germany, because he is a suspected Nazi guard. Top Nazis planned EU-style Fourth Reich. The Vatican plays down the Pope's Hitler Youth past. That's from Reuters, but they can't. We have the admissions. We have the photos of jelly rats in the Hitler Youth. And we wrap up that history mystery note with another one from Alex Constantine, a Nazi Pope potpourri, running down the list of all the connections between popes and Catholics and demons and Nazis. A little murder and mayhem. We, of course, had the recent shooting in Iraq, fratricide, 5 killed, and the Camp Liberty shooter's dad blames the army. That's from military.com. Let's see how much traction that gets. Suspect in Iraq attack had recently had his weapon taken away. That's from the Los Angeles Times. California wildfires were caused by a botched safety measure. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. 44 dead, 300,000 homeless after flooding in Brazil. Violence in Somalia displaces over 27,000. And we finally have John Allen Muhammad, the D.C. sniper, in his third death penalty appeal. And a quick note, I don't think I ever really talked too much about that, but living in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, less than an hour away from D.C., right around there, the D.C. sniper event was very close to home. One of the more exhilarating times, as my sidebar goes on, I was doing a sound design for a show called Betty's Summer Vacation, a farce basically about media taking over your lives and everything becoming a big game show, TV show joke. And I worked on that in putting tons of samples and clips and things into the sound design. And there are clips in that sound design of basically reports still about the supposed white van and the DC sniper. That was, of course, the original story. There was a white van. We, of course, know generally what happens when the white vans roll up, and those are usually intel ops. But again, we won't get into that, and I digress further. Police State International, a military police document reveals integration with local law enforcement. House demands full disclosure on DHS right-wing extremism report. House bill aims to strip right-wing extremists of the Second Amendment. And that's Bill H.R. 2159, seeking to disarm individuals the government suspects of being terrorists. We've got two sailors caught smuggling coke. Surprise, surprise. Facebook urged to remove Holocaust deniers group. Alan Keyes arrested protesting abortion at Notre Dame. And Judy Blume and anti-abortion death threats. Group condemns FEMA's move to evict thousands of Katrina survivors. That's from Raw Story. NPR censored a review of the new film Outrage that outs gay politicians. So in running the clip and in talking about the story, the film, they censored out the names. Thanks, National Petroleum Radio. Naval Academy rolls out graphic novel. Again, the military entertainment complex. We're in the Army now with Mom from the Washington Post. Isn't it so fun? Hey, we're all in the Army together. We're all going to fucking die for a lie. Yay. Florida police use motorized paragliders, and for some reason I have to find that out from the Telegraph out of the UK. FBI terrorist watch list riddled with errors. YouTube free speech purge accelerates as they're banning channels left and right. Jason Burmes' InfoWar channel, the latest one. And we note that there's no room for InfoWarriors in YouTube's coming Hulu-ized universe. Or taking the U out of the tube. After two mistrials, the U.S. finally gets convictions in the Miami terror case. That would be of the guys who were originally known as the Liberty City Seven. Ultimately, five were convicted in this plot to blow up the Sears Tower, if you recall. And, of course, there's an informant involved getting people to talk about things on tape, provocateuring the action, aiding and abetting the entire thing. We see it time and time again. G20 used police undercover men to incite crowds. Again, that's agent provocateurs. Dressing up as protesters to blend in with everyone, cause violence, get out, and let the crackdown come. It's another problem-reaction solution. They create the problem to generate the reaction so they can give the solution they wanted in the first place. Brain scanning may be used in UK security checks. That's from The Guardian. UK counterterrorism drills fall short from the Financial Times. UK government wants the military to run state schools from the Daily Mail. Jackie Smith, Home Office head, and her secret plan to keep on snooping. We've noted that already, but that's new from the Times Online. Ireland on the verge of extending TV license to cover the internet. Every house to have a gas and electricity smart meter by 2020. Again, from the Daily Mail. All those last several headlines, all out of the UK. Guatemalan government may suspend liberties under state of emergency. That, as well as this from Wikinews, both. Guatemala now arrests a Twitter user for inciting financial panic. The ACLU notes human gene patents infringe speech. That's from Wired. And the most frightening story, at least accompanied with the most disturbing photos that I've seen in the last week. This originally from the New York Times, scouts train to fight terrorists and more. So in this article about Homeland Security getting in bed with the Boy Scouts. And if you'd like to see the photo of the nightmare of things to come, you can see it here in 11, 12, 13-year-old boys dressed up like the Stasi. Again, I don't have time, nor do I maybe even have the stomach to go into it, but this should scare the fuck out of you. Boy Scouts train to become Homeland Gestapo. A couple articles from Kurt Nemo and Paul Joseph Watson. Of course, they say it. They're fighting terrorists and more. And whatever we say, we want them to do. And we note that Obama wants a, quote, civilian national security force. It's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded as the military. Two last lines of local liquid importance. First, the Pirates of Portland noting crime here at our ports. That's by way of the Portland Tribune. And finally, the National Guard being sent into, right into my home area, my home base of Southern West Virginia. National Guard sent to flooded West Virginia areas. That's the 5:15 News Purge. And again, all those things are ridiculously important, and we could probably make whole shows out of a lot of them. But we don't have time. Let's get to the terror drills. Falcon Virgo 0907. Testing DC's aerospace response today, May 15th. Pentagon, they actually warned the city of military flyover for NORAD drills. More on that subject in a few minutes. But this from globalsecurity.org. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, that's NORAD, will conduct an exercise over the nation's capital and its suburbs on May 15th. Defense Department officials said, and there are links, you can read more from historycommons.org, NORAD.mil, New York Daily News, Philly.com, and WJZ.com. all on Falcon Virgo, testing DC aerospace response today. This has probably now already happened. Air Force F-16 fighting Falcon jets, Coast Guard Dolphin choppers, and Civil Air Patrol Cessnas will participate in the exercise. A number of Falcon Virgo exercises have taken place since 9/11. The most recent one over Washington was in March. Quote, the exercise is always held in the middle of the night to not interfere with civilian air traffic. This said by Pentagon spokeswoman Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Almara Belk. The aircraft involved follow all noise abatement procedures. The exercise is in coordination with the FAA, the National Capital Region Command Center, the Joint Air Defense Operations Center, the Continental U.S. NORAD region, the Civil Air Patrol, and the Coast Guard. Residents in the area can expect flights to occur shortly after midnight and into the early morning hours of May 15th. The exercise should wrap up during the morning. They note that in the event of inclement weather, it will be canceled. It's funny to note that maybe it will just a little inclement weather and we'll cancel this. However, on the morning of 9/11, when you had more than a dozen war games and terror drills of hijacked jets being aimed at government buildings, well, hell, we just didn't know what to do. I've never seen so much real-world activity in an exercise. So that's just one of the numerous terror drills, and we will be seeing more as the summer goes on. We, of course, upcoming have the FEMA national-level exercise 09, NLE 09, replacing the top-off exercises. Perhaps the top-off name got a little too dirty, a little too exposed. As if all the things with the swine flu paranoia, and we went over the latest swine flu updates on B-Side 122 just a little while ago, so you need to go back so you're fully up to date. With all that going on, and with all the questions that I and hopefully millions of other people like me wonder about the labs, you create it, oh, and whoops, it somehow gets out. We have this. Scientist arrested for smuggling vials used in Ebola and AIDS research into the USA. This from the French agency Press. A Canadian scientist has been arrested for smuggling 22 vials stolen from Canada's National Microbiology Lab used in Ebola and HIV research into the United States, Canadian and U.S. officials said Wednesday. Conan Michel Yao. K-O-N-A-N, Conan, Michel, M-I-C-H-E-L, and I've seen other places spell it as Michael. I don't have confirmation whether it's Michel or Michael, and the last name's Yao, Y-A-O. 42 years old, was taken into custody while crossing the border from Manitoba province into the western U.S. state of North Dakota on May 5th, said a spokeswoman for Public Health Agency of Canada, which operates the lab, the National Microbiology Lab. According to U.S. prosecutor Lynn Jordheim, Yao was detained for carrying unidentified biological materials in vials wrapped in aluminum foil, inside a glove, and packaged in a plastic bag along with electrical wires, all in the trunk of his car. Yao said in an affidavit he stole the vials, described as research vectors, from the Winnipeg lab on his last day of work there on January 21st. He told U.S. border guards he was taking them to his new job with the National Institutes of Health at the Biodefense Research Laboratory in Bethesda, Maryland. U.S. authorities feared their contents could pose a terrorist threat, but tests later showed they're not hazardous. This turned out not to be a terrorism-related case, he said, by telephone from North Dakota. It appears to be exactly as Yao said in his affidavit. However, he still faces possible charges for, you know, smuggling vials into the U.S. Yao, meanwhile, remains in U.S. custody after waiving his right to bail and preliminary hearings as he awaits a possible grand jury indictment for smuggling. A Public Health Agency of Canada spokeswoman told the AFP Yao, quote, was working on vaccines for the Ebola and HIV, among other things. But he only had access to harmless and non-infectious materials similar to what you'd find in a hospital or university lab. He did not have access to dangerous materials. Somehow, that doesn't make me feel better.
Yes, we're already doing a review of things with our departmental security folks, the people from the lab, and people from Treasury Board Secretariat, to see what, in addition, might be done. But we have a lot of confidence in security procedures of the laboratory, that we control what needs to be controlled, and that these materials at no time pose any risk to the public. They're non-infectious agents.
There is something missing from the National Microbiology Lab in Winnipeg. It's been missing for months, but we're only finding out about it now. Vials containing traces of the Ebola virus gene were found in the trunk of a researcher's car last week. He was caught crossing into the United States. And as Marissa Dragani reports, the incident raises all kinds of questions about biological threats and the security of Canadians.
Scientists handle the deadliest viruses in the world here at the National Microbiology Lab in Winnipeg. Security is supposed to be tight, but a former lab researcher is in a U.S. jail tonight because he breached that security system.
This is the first time in the whole history of the lab that we've seen something like this.
In January, 42-year-old Michelle Conan Yao walked out of the lab with 22 vials containing traces of the Ebola virus gene. But no one knew they were missing until last week, when Yao left Canada to work in a lab near Washington, D.C. U.S. border agents searched Yao's car at the Manitoba-North Dakota border. They found the vials in the trunk, wrapped in aluminum foil and placed inside a glove in a plastic bag. According to court documents, Yao admitted he stole the vials, saying he did not want to start his research over from the beginning when he entered into his next fellowship with the National Institute of Health. Officials say Yao didn't have high-level security clearance to give him access to the actual virus, so the contents of the vials aren't dangerous and are no threat to public safety. They can only be used to make a vaccine. This biosafety expert says Canada needs a stricter security system, like the one in the U.S.
They have a very strict control process with regards to inventory control, security clearance for the staff, transfer of the agents within states. I think it is very rigid.
Others say the lab security system works just fine.
I believe that had he taken Ebola or something that was death-threatening, then the system would have failed. But the system didn't fail because he didn't get it.
Michelle Conan Yao could be charged in Canada, and he faces smuggling charges in the U.S. If convicted there, he could face a $250,000 fine and spend up to 20 years in prison. Marissa Dragani, CBC News.
They noted now they need stricter controls like the ones they have in the U.S. Yeah. There's a lot more on this story from the Winnipeg Sun, the Toronto Star, CTV.ca, and on and on. Smuggling vials into North Dakota, you know, to carry them on into Maryland. We now have the updates on Air Force One. And what do we get? A resignation and a photo. We, of course, note the two flashbacks. The original reports, low-flying Air Force One look-alike freaks out New York. That's from Monday, April 27th. And we've noted, too, that my video that I put up on YouTube, I believe, is about to crack 200,000 views. The second update was, of course, the White House won't release photos of Air Force One stunt. And then, of course, the update within that posting, they flip-flopped. And we get one photo, which is now posted in this third update. Air Force One, a resignation and a photo. White House orchestrator of New York City flyover blunder, quote-unquote, resigns. This from the Deutsche Press Agency. A White House official resigned Friday, May 8th, after allowing a presidential plane to fly low over New York, causing widespread panic last month that a terrorist attack was underway. Luis Caldera, C-A-L-D-E-R-A. Luis Caldera, director of the White House Military Office, apologized last month after setting up a government photo op that for many New Yorkers brought back the images of 9/11. Something to laugh about? Yeah, sure.
Now, Sasha and Malia aren't here tonight because they're grounded. You can't just take Air Force One on a joyride to Manhattan. I don't care whose kids you are. We've been setting some ground rules here.
Now, it's all fun and games at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Continuing, however, the Boeing 747, accompanied by an F-16 fighter jet carrying camera equipment, descended on New York's skyline on April 27th in order to take a photograph above the soon-to-reopen crown of the Statue of Liberty. New York's public was not informed, and residents and office workers in the city's downtown financial district all pretty much freaked out, fled their skyscrapers into the streets. A nice, amazing terror op. Caldera's resignation letter, accepted by Obama, says, quote, the whole scandal, well, let me correct that. Caldera said the scandal, quote, has made it impossible for me to effectively lead the White House military office.
A decision by this administration to go ahead and fire someone.
Well, that's right, Wolf. The first time in this young administration that a top aide has stepped down over a flap here. The president, moments ago, accepting the resignation of Luis Caldera, the head of the White House military office, essentially taking the fall for that Air Force One flap. You remember the low flyover, the New York City skyline there in Manhattan. People in New Jersey and New York, both scared, thinking that maybe there was a terrorist incident going on or something. Instead, it was just a photo op, essentially. They were trying to take new publicity photos for the jet that is normally Air Force One when the president is flying on it. That was coordinated by the White House military office here. You remember the president was irate when he first learned about that happening, the mix-up. The White House just moments ago releasing a report on what went wrong and also releasing one photo of that flyover. We're just getting all that information in at this moment. Well, for the bottom line, is the president has now accepted the resignation of the head of the White House military office, Luis Caldera. This first reported by the New York Daily News, now confirmed by senior White House officials. Also, the president ordering now the deputy chief of staff, Jim Messina, as well as Defense Secretary Robert Gates, figure out and to make sure this does not happen again, Walt.
Yeah, we've been showing our viewers that photo, the official White House photo that was just released, that showing that plane, Air Force One, when the president's on board, flying over the Statue of Liberty. Pretty dramatic shot that they released one picture.
A $300,000+ picture. That was your money. We have Caldera's resignation letter and also the White House review of the flyover, both in PDF format, both thanks to the New York Post, and a funny little update and addendum to this story. The FAA denies the Navy's New York City flyover request. This from the Associated Press by way of military.com. The Federal Aviation Administration said it turned down a U.S. Navy request to fly a patrol aircraft past Manhattan on Monday, exactly 2 weeks after a government photo shoot caused brief panic near Ground Zero. A Navy unit from Brunswick, Maine, wanted to fly a P-3 Orion reconnaissance plane up and down the Hudson at about 3,000 feet well above New York's tallest skyscrapers at around 10:30 a.m., this last Monday. After city officials were informed and higher-level FAA officials learned about the request, they declined permission for the flight. Just a little too soon. Hell, the terror from the last one hadn't worn off. We're still getting a good terror rush from that one. Because, of course, a terrorized population will easily be herded. And I suppose, speaking of planes, something about airplanes segues to our latest list of updates. This on the curious crash of Flight 3407. The story was back in the news a lot this week as we had some of the hearings about the crash, about what went wrong. However, we'll start with the two flashback notes that kicked this off originally on MediaMonarchy.com. 9/11 widow and activist among the 50 killed in New York plane crash. That's the crash, February 12th of Flight 3407, killing Beverly Eckert, 9/11 widow, and of course she, 7 days prior to that, had met with other 9/11 victims' family members, meeting with the Obamasiah. They obviously didn't ask any tough questions, and we have reports and have quotes, and I've noted them before, that basically it sounded like they were all mollified. They were all gaga over the Obamasiah. And they were basically talking about the military tribunals. And, of course, he was assuring them, you know, oh, well, we can't go on with this if we don't know that all, you know, all our ducks are in a row. But again, all we have to do is, of course, turn right back now to Google News right now, 32 minutes ago from the Washington Post. Military tribunals expected to return. Flip. Flop. Or, a little more succinctly, Obama mauls indefinite detention without trial for detainees. You starting to get it? But back to the curious crash of Flight 3407, originally from Bloomberg here. Flight 3407 went from complacency to catastrophe. Pinnacle Airlines Corporation pilots went from complacency to catastrophe in the February crash near Buffalo, New York, that killed 50 people, and they didn't recognize the danger, said a U.S. Safety Board member. National Transportation Safety Board member Debbie Herzman said in a hearing of the board on May 14th in Washington that the pilots performed tasks such as extending the landing gear without realizing their airspeed was plummeting. The board, in those 3 days of hearings, was examining the hiring and training at Pinnacle's Colgan unit, C-O-L-G-A-N. Looking into the hiring and training at Colgan, and the possibility of pilot error and fatigue in the February crash, Senator Charles Schumer, New York Democrat, wrote the FAA urging a re-evaluation of training criteria for pilots. We do have within here, among some of the other videos and reports, we have the FAA flight animation for you. However, continuing the Bloomberg article, the pirates... Not pirates. We're not talking about pirates. The pilots' incorrect responses to the plane's aerodynamic stall showed, quote, they were discombobulated. This crew went from complacency to catastrophe. They didn't see it coming. Cockpits may need automatic alerts to tell pilots their speed is dropping. I don't see any evidence he ever understood the situation he was in. Robert Key Dismukes, a NASA Ames Research Center expert on cockpit distraction, said of the plane's pilot, Marvin Renslow. Conversations between Renslow, 47, and co-pilot Rebecca Shaw, 24, about icing on the plane were leading them away from what to do next. Neither had much experience flying in icing, he said, based on the reading of the transcript from the cockpit flight recorder. Communications from a controller at a critical phase in the flight didn't help the workload situation. We have two different reports, both, I believe, from WIVB on the final moments of Flight 3407.
47-year-old Captain Martin Renslow had racked up 5 unsatisfactory test flights called check rides, 2 during his 3 years at the airline and 3 in the years before that. Colgan Air acknowledges the 5 flunked check rides, but adds 2 of which we learned after the accident that he had not disclosed on his application. The plane was on final approach to Buffalo when the stick shaker activated, alerting pilots that they were going too slow and the plane was about to stall. As the stick automatically pushed forward in order to dive the plane and pick up speed, the captain pulled up, exactly the opposite of what pilots are trained to do. Colgan acknowledges Renslow never trained on the stall warning system in a simulator. The FAA only requires teaching that in classroom training.
The stick shaker training is, in my view, is very, very important. And to just read it out of a book and just talk about it is not very good training.
Colgan Air says the captain actually had the highest level of certification the FAA offers on any aircraft. But now FAA requirements may come under scrutiny.
They're not, in fact, going through page by page and determining what's appropriate and what's not. They're just saying your overall training is adequate from our perspective.
The plane's co-pilot, 24-year-old Rebecca Shaw, had a clean training record. But according to those who heard the cockpit voice recording, he apparently made some comment just before takeoff about being under the weather that night.
If she weren't already at work, she probably would report sick, or she should have reported in sick, something along those lines.
It's a second-by-second account of what went on inside the cockpit of Flight 3407 3 months ago today. The transcript of the cockpit voice recorder tells all, from the routine takeoff in Newark to the chilling moments leading up to the crash in Clarence Center. Throughout the entire flight, Captain Marvin Renslow and First Officer Rebecca Shaw engage in conversation. The topics range from plans for their futures in aviation to admitting how inexperienced they are. They even have small talk when flying below 10,000 feet, breaking the sterile cockpit rule. On several occasions, Shaw references her head cold and admits she's making mistakes. At one point, the air traffic controller wants a different plane, the Saba 3045, to contact Cleveland, and Shaw responds to it. The air traffic controller says, "Nope, Colgan 3407, you stay here. That was from a Saba." And Shaw says, "Oh, I'm not doing very good tonight." 8 minutes before the crash, the cabin heard from the flight group for the very last time. Nothing out of the ordinary, just routine landing instructions. 2 minutes later, Shaw asks if the captain sees ice on the windshield. Renslow has a frightening response. He says, "Oh yeah, that's the most I've seen on the leading edges in a long time." Seconds later, Shaw makes the chilling confession. She says, "I've never seen icing conditions. I've never de-iced. I've never experienced any of that. I don't want to have to experience that and make those kinds of calls. You know, I'd have freaked out. I'd have seen this much ice and thought, oh my gosh, we're going to crash." 47 seconds before the crash, air traffic control says goodnight. And that's when everything goes wrong. This is the NTSB's animation of how the crash happened. Shaw says the gears are down. Seconds later, the stick shaker warns them they're losing speed. A sharp sound of horns tells them the autopilot has disconnected. You can hear the sound of the engine increasing power. Renslow says, "Jesus Christ." Stick shaker again warns them they're going to stall. Shaw says, "Flaps up." Renslow grunts. Shaw asks if the flaps should be up. Renslow says, "You're up." He swears. He says, "We're down." The last thing you hear is Shaw screaming. What the cockpit voice recorder doesn't tell us is what caused the crash. It could still be months before the NTSB makes that determination.
So after all that, they end in saying, "We don't know what caused the crash." I have posted up for you the list of Alex Constantine's Flight 3407 crash archives, and I'll run down the list for you just again to give you just a hint of how perhaps much deeper, much wider this story could be. I've been in the process also of lining up an interview with Alex Constantine to hopefully discuss all the connections on Flight 3407. So let's run down the list real quick. Tragedy of the 9/11 widow, genocide gate ties, Northrop Grumman and the Buffalo crash, and a prior related plane crash. Other passengers of note on Flight 3407, the audio reveals ice was not a factor in the crash, a Parmalat scandal connection to the crash, Buffalo investigator once held the nuclear football, New York State Police conduct illegal frantic search for video of Flight 3407 crash response, illegally confiscate the camera and delete sections of tape. Flight 3407 and Middle Eastern banking, oil, and parapolitical terrorism. Again, we ask the question, ICE. Crindler and Crindler cons the public with a cover story. Icing didn't affect the plane in Buffalo crash. Pastor Eastlack joins the CIA in the return of the Cheney clique. Judge hearing survivor suits is a George H.W. Poppy Bush appointee, a Ford Foundation fellow, and he committed constitutional violations in the Leonard Peltier case. Aviation expert Randall Brink's fraudulent resume. Who really is the acting NTSB chairman Mark V. Rosenker, R-O-S-E-N-K-E-R, Bugs, Bombs, and Bucks, Military Bioterror Connections, and the Origins of Swine Flu. Now enter a Scientology legal front and yet another biotech connection. More swine flu profiteers. Two passengers worked for Invacare with facilities a mile and a half from the boy in El Rea, New York, diagnosed with swine flu. So again, connections to swine flu, workers on the plane crashing nearby, swine flu cases nearby. And then the last few recent ones, you'll recall me mentioning two Flight 3407 attorneys die in their own plane crash. Human rights worker Allison DeForge reconsidered, and finally, pilot error or stall, accident or design. That is the list of the growing archive from Alex Constantine on the oddities of Flight 3407. So there are the latest updates, error and catastrophe by accident or design. I suppose that makes an easy segue to the murder and mayhem. Monuments, motives in the military. This is where, over the last now several months, we've just been noting just the general level of chaos going on around the world. A lot of mass shooters, a lot of events, a lot of suicides, a lot of murder-suicides, death, destruction, murder, mayhem. Monuments, motives, and military. We kick it off with another note on the Wesleyan University out of Connecticut shooter and his notebook saying, quote, "I think it okay to kill Jews and go on killing spree at this school." An update from the Associated Press on the Georgia professor shooter. His body's been found. A professor wanted for killing his wife and two other people at a community theater 2 weeks ago was found dead in the North Georgia woods last Saturday, his body covered in brush and dirt, officials said. Two guns were found with the body of marketing professor George Zinkhan, Z-I-N-K-H-A-N, who vanished after the April 25th shootings near the University of Georgia, said Athens-Clark County Police Chief Joseph Lumpkin. The guns matched those described by witnesses to the shooting. The police did not say how they believe Zinkhan died. Authorities hope to have a cause of death by the end of Saturday. I do not have an update on that for you. The one thing I will note just now reading that, if he killed himself out in the woods, how do you cover his body in brush and dirt after that? A quick note from the New York Times. After a Boston crash, a cell phone ban may loom. I believe, one of their commuter trolleys crashed, and of course, dumbass was on his cell phone. U.S. sailor shot at 5th Fleet headquarters. This from the Deutsche Press Agency. A U.S. Navy sailor was injured early last Saturday by a gunshot at the U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet Command headquarters in Manama, Bahrain. The sailor, age 19, was said to be in stable condition after he suffered a wound to the neck. He was rushed to a local hospital, but U.S. authorities declined to reveal how the incident occurred, only saying, quote, "A U.S. Marine is in stable condition following an accidental discharge of a small firearm weapon at the base," that said by base spokesman Lieutenant Nathan Christensen. Another update, and again, sidebar, I find it interesting, a lot of this stories that we have been covering for the last several weeks have a lot of updates. Whether it's Flight 3407, swine flu, or what have you. We now have the 8th person now passing away from the assassination attempt on the Dutch royal family. This from Lauren Coleman on the Copycat Effect, noting that an 8th person has died in the wake of the assassination attempt on the Dutch royal family. The Denald, that's D-E-N-A-A-L-D in English, basically meaning the needle. And I have the photo, just a regular photo, of this monument that if you'll watch the video, and again, when we first covered the story, we didn't play the video because there's nothing really for you to hear in radio form. However, you should check out the video of this guy careening through people and ultimately crashing into an obelisk. The Denald, or the needle, is the obelisk monument in the Dutch city of Apeldoorn that became the final resting place for Karst Tate's automobile. Karst Tate's being the driver slash killer. The car rammed into a stone monument, the Masonic structure pictured for you there, after speeding through the crowd, narrowly missing an open-topped bus carrying Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, of course, always a visitor to the Bilderberg meetings, and her other royal inbred elite family members. Police say the car's driver, identified by Dutch media as Karst Tates, that's K-A-R-S-T-T-A-T-E-S, Karst Tates, he admitted attempting to attack the popular monarch shortly after his car came to a halt. He didn't give a motive, though. The attack on the Queen's Day national holiday raised questions in the Netherlands about the level of security surrounding the royal family. Now, for more on all the symbolic linkages, copycat evidence, and video concerning the attack, there's a link for you to a different post on copycateffect.blogspot.com. Oakley, California police fatally shoot a man after a car chase. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. And we note, originally, what we had an update from a little bit ago, the dad blames the army. Another note on the U.S. soldier killing five fellow troops in an Iraq shootout. This from Danger Room. Shocking news from Iraq. An American soldier killed five fellow troops in a shooting incident at Camp Liberty, the heavily fortified U.S.-based complex that abuts Baghdad International Airport. There's more from Danger Room, from the Associated Press, from the Washington Post, and even a little background on fragging. Will we see the return of fragging? And finally, another note on Liberty. Liberty County, Texas this time. A boy dies after a Liberty County shooting. Charges against a couple accused of firing at passersby may upgrade. Crazy fucking nut-ass couple in bumfuck Texas. With signs, and there's photos. You can follow the story over to Raw Story and see the photos of their property. Trespassers will be shot. Survivors will be shot again. Something like that. And they fucking killed a kid who maybe accidentally was on their property or was just, you know, stopping their truck outside. So not doing real well to help folks who are lawful, thoughtful, conscientious, trained gun owners. We're about to shift gears into all the latest on the cyber space war, nuking hackers or hacking the nukers. However, before we do that, I just want to tell you that they want your soul.
Your cell phone, your wallet, your time, your ideas, no bar code, no party, no ID, no beers, your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears, no SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here, your blood, your sweat, your passion, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your sessions, your sex, your pills, your grass, your tits, your ass, your laughs, your home, we want your soul, your house, your
your habits, your facts, your fears, your buttons, your address, your shoes size, your ears, your digits, your plans, your number, your eyes, your schedule, your desktop, your details, your life. Show us your children, your photos, your home. Here, take credit, take insurance, take a loan. Get a job, get a pension, get a haircut, get a suit. Playing the lottery, playing football, playing the field, your thumb suit. We'll show you free, we'll show you spoon, we'll buy you drinks, we'll pay your food. We'll sell you crap, we'll charge you debt, we'll buy big bank, we'll want the cash.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here, here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these bitchy retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom.
no stops, no games, no limits, no units, no opinions, no way, no thinkers, no teachers, no facts, no freaks, no skaters, no tweakers, no truth, no fun.
They want your soul. That track's of undeterminate origin, at least to me, but if you just Google up They Want Your Soul or We Want Your Soul, there's a nice video that goes along with that. And that gets us into hour number two of episode 123 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 15th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato, coming to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Oh, what the hell. Let's look again at the breaking news we have on this morning of May 15th. Bankruptcy week ahead. Chrysler seeks okay to tap a $4.5 billion DIP loan. Obama aides confirm detainee trials will resume. Change you can't fucking believe. And, of course, Gingrich says we have an absolute obligation to investigate Pelosi, but not to investigate the criminals in action, CIA. Sri Lankan military fights to surround rebels. Nike plans to eliminate about 5% of their global workforce. Ron Paul's son, Rand, announces his Senate candidacy. And 56 minutes ago, from the French agency press, U.S. abortion views shift. Majority are pro-life. Which I guess gives me the chance to mention, of course, how we see the phony left-right paradigm shift back and forth. One party's in favor, one party's out of favor. When your party's out of favor, you can see all those things the other party does that you can never admit about your team. So as we've noted, talk coming from the likes of Michael Weiner and Glenn Beck about false flag terrorism and civilian inmate labor programs, co-opting the Patriot message. And again, as one party's in, one party's out, they throw us the football issues that they, ultimately the elites, don't give a shit about. They don't fucking care about abortion or gay marriage or any of that. It all actually ties in with their eugenics agenda, but they are little cultural footballs. They toss us, and we rabble, rabble, rabble around them, and they carry on their agenda. They want your souls indeed. But let's get back to the page. Cyberspace war. Nuking hackers and hacking the nukers, we first note another terror drill, this by way of Army.mil, Unified Quest 2009, Army War Games for Future Conflicts. But if we jump to ABC News, Department of Justice budget details high-tech crime-fighting tools. The release of the 2010 budget request has shed more light on some FBI surveillance programs the Bureau is currently developing and testing. While the FBI has been criticized at times for its slow reforms after 9/11, which revealed the FBI did not have adequate computer resources, some of the new programs sound like something out of a high-tech cloak and dagger film. The budget request shows that the FBI is currently developing a new, quote, advanced electronic surveillance program, which is being funded at $233.9 million for 2010. The program has 133 employees, 15 of whom are agents. According to the budget documents released Thursday, the program, otherwise known as Going Dark, supports the FBI's electronic surveillance intelligence collection and evidence gathering capabilities, as well as those of the greater intel community. The cyber war is ramping up. We've noted in the last several episodes that it's coming from the Information Operations Roadmap, where the military says they must fight the net as an enemy weapons system. Supposed Democratic Representative Sanchez defends her bill. I believe that would be the cyberbullying bill, the Megan Meyer Cyberbullying Prevention Act, if you're nasty. She's been defending her proposed legislation outlawing hostile electronic speech, imprisoning hostile bloggers. And, of course, we'll note that it's already against the law to threaten and harass people. You don't need a new law. But again, it comes back to parents not paying attention to what their kids are doing. But again, as I noted, sometimes how can you blame families who work their asses off for some shitty job and low wage to put terror juice in their car and their kid in school? And who can think about all this stuff? And we heard, you know, Bill Hicks back in the track, We Want Your Soul, talking about American Gladiators. Just change American Gladiators to American Idol, and it's the same goddamn thing. From DefenseTalk.com, general calls for new thinking on cyberspace. The Air Force's top cyber official told a mostly industry-based audience on May 8th that the cyber arena is filled with new business opportunities and some very hard challenges. Quote, in an Air Force that is a lot of times focused on kinetic activity, read that as F-16 fighting Falcons and 2,000-pound bombs, not at warfare conducted in a different manner at the speed of light. Cyber operations require some new thinking. This said by Major General William Lord, commander of Air Force Cyber Command, speaking to about 125 people at the Hanscom Representatives Association meeting. He noted that it's very difficult to find out who the attackers are or even what their attributes and intentions are. He also noted that existing laws and policies often hamper the ability of U.S. cyber experts to find answers or to launch an attack of their own. It's easier for us to get approval to do a kinetic strike with the 2,000-pound bomb than it is for us to do a non-kinetic cyber act. Yet while law, policy, and culture all present potential barriers to effectively control cyberspace, technology needs are just as vital. Quote, our trouble today is that we're always shooting behind the wabbit. We wait for the latest exploit, and then when something bad happens, we figure out how to fix it. That actually echoes something I've said on this show many times. That at a very young age, even before I started to study any sort of alternative history, quote unquote, that it always seemed like the way we operated here in the States was that we waited till a problem blows up in our face and throw a bunch of money at it. He's basically saying the same thing, however, he's talking about fighting the net. We've noted it before, but here's more proof, albeit from Fox News this time, but NASA approves partial privatization of the space program. We've noted it before. There it is again. NASA rolling into the DOD. But from WorldTribune.com, China developed its own operating system for cyber war with us, being the U.S. A leading cybersecurity specialist said last week that China has developed its own ultra-secure operating system for a strategic edge in its cyber warfare with U.S. computer systems. Kevin G. Coleman, a specialist with Technolytics Institute, with a link for you, and a consultant to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, said in congressional testimony that the United States is woefully unprepared to counter cyber attacks on its electronic infrastructure. Part of the cyber arms race includes China's creation of Kylin, K-Y-L-I-N, a new hardened operating system. It began converting systems to it in 2007, according to the current edition of EastAsiaIntel.com. Teenage bomb threat suspect was a 4chan prank star. This is the guy that's not being held under the Patriot Act. If you recall, we briefly mentioned last week the bloviating about a kid who was supposedly being held incommunicado under the Patriot Act, and we even had threat level calling out InfoWars and other news agencies. This originally comes from WRAL News. So, not exactly some squeaky clean flag saluting kid. He's running with the 4chan pranksters. They of Anonymous and the like. Not against him, but let's get the right info. Flight simulation site Avism, or rather Avsim, A-V-S-I-M, Avsim, aviation simulator. Flight simulation site Avsim destroyed by hackers. This from Wikinews. The flight simulation website Avsim has been destroyed after an attack by hackers. The website was used for all types of computer flight simulation, but it was mainly devoted to Flight Simulator X. The site was launched 13 years ago in 1996, now quote-unquote destroyed by hackers. Electronic Police State 2008, that's from Kryptone, but from Federal Computer Week information sharing platform hacked. Are you noticing a theme here? The Homeland Security Department's platform for sharing sensitive but unclassified data with state and local authorities was recently hacked. The intrusion into the Homeland Stupidity Information Network, HSIN, was confirmed to Federal Computer Week by Harry McDavid, the chief info officer for DHS's Office of Operations Coordination and Planning. McDavid said the U.S. Computer Emergency Readiness Team reported an intrusion into the system in late March. The initial hack was brief and limited, but it was followed by a more extensive hack in early April. Crest TV has the U.S. warning of a military response to hackers. So more on that from Danger Room, where a general says we just might nuke those cyber attackers. How would the American military respond to an attack on its networks? And again, when we're talking about this, we're talking about critical infrastructure. We're talking about those vague words that the Patriot Act uses to be able to take over whatever. And whatever they want to call critical infrastructure is that. But in reality, we're talking about the power grid. And we're talking about all the threatiganda and all the prepping. Can you imagine how people would freak out if their iPhone, BlackBerry, Facebook, Twitter shit wasn't working? Or more importantly, the ATMs weren't working? So again, how would the American military respond to an attack on its networks? If we take the commander of U.S. Strategic Forces at his word, they'd nuke those hackers if need be. Speaking to reporters at a press breakfast last week, General Kevin Chilton, the head of U.S. Strategic Command, that's STRATCOM, he said the president retained the option to retaliate with military force in the event of a serious cyber attack against U.S. networks. Global Security Newswire's Elaine Grossman has the key quote, quote, I think you don't take any response options off the table from an attack on the United States of America. Why would we constrain ourselves on how we respond? More on that from Stars and Stripes, and you can get Chilton's bio from AF.mil. So, why would we constrain ourselves on how we respond? Probably because you wouldn't know where those hacks were coming in the first place. But you tell all of us that some brown-skinned people did it, or probably more likely that some homegrown terrorist, some violent radicalization here on the McVeigh Heartland Security North American Union home front. But we'll just nuke them. the last couple notes on the coming cyberspace war. The first major solar flare of 2009. Is this a sign the sun will return to normal? We'll, of course, also note the upcoming sunspot cycle 24 to be kicking off in 2012. Sunspot activity, again, affecting our infrastructure. Pentagon preps soldier telepathy push. That's, of course, from Danger Room as well. Bomb detection CEO could be the new DARPA chief. Pentagon and Congress square off over unconventional war shift. Those last three all from Danger Room. We also have the supposed reasons behind Google and IBM being ahead of the competition. This piece from Time Magazine basically says is, you know, they're not afraid to take risks. However, if you do even the most rudimentary of research about the international business machines and Google, you know, one, IBM and the Holocaust conjoined forever. And we know that Google and their CEOs, or at least some of their proxies, have been and will probably be again at this week's Bilderberg meeting, where the rich and elite in the media, military, entertainment, educational, industrial complex all meet to decide policy that then goes down to the Council on Foreign Relations, then goes down to all their talking heads that are all strategically placed within the mainstream media, and it goes down to you and you mockingbirded out. The roundtables to the think tanks to you. We finally have another strange note from the Seattle Exopolitics Examiner. Famed UFO historian says that humanity may be targeted by predatory reptilian extraterrestrial species. And unfortunately, that's the kind of shit that generally gets conflated in the realm of conspiracy theory. So if I'm bringing up valid, unanswered questions about JFK or 9/11 or Oklahoma City or the elections, stolen, or what have you, well, I may as well be talking about chupacabras and aliens and grays and reptiles. They stir it all up, poison the well, piss in the Cheerios, and sullies the whole thing. So I've mentioned 9/11, so let's do it. Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari believes that Osama bin Laden is dead. He also notes that bin Laden was a, quote, operator for the U.S. But from Raw Story, by way of NBC, Meet the Press, with new host, new talking head, David Gregory. And again, this by way of InfoWars and Raw Story and Wikipedia and the Times of India and on and on and on. Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari believes Osama bin Laden is dead. I don't think he's alive. I have a strong feeling and a reason to believe it.
Where is Osama bin Laden?
You haven't been there for 8 years, you tell me. You lost him in Tora Bora, I didn't. I was in prison. In fact, my wife warned America about Osama bin Laden in 89. She rang up Senior Bush and asked of him, are you destabilizing my government? Because he paid the then opposition $10 million to overthrow the first woman elected in an Islamic country. So we knew that he was your operator. And
so you're not actively looking for him?
I think the world is looking for him, and we are part of the world's lookout brigade.
Do you think he's alive or dead?
I've said before that I don't think he's alive.
And you believe that?
I have a strong feeling, and I have some reason to believe that, because I've asked my counterparts in the American intelligence agencies, and they haven't heard of him since 7 years.
Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari says intelligence services of the United States and his own country have created the Taliban. Zardari said the CIA and ISI found and financed the Taliban insurgents. He accused Washington of supporting the military rule of Pervez Musharraf, who allegedly sided with the Taliban. Zardari disagreed with the popular belief in the U.S. that the Pakistani military and intelligence services still feel sympathetic toward the militants. The Pakistani president made the remarks in an interview with the NBC.
And Samina Ahmed from the International Crisis Group joined us just a short time ago from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad. Now, President Zardari today described the Taliban as a joint creation of Pakistan's intelligence service, the ISI, and the American intelligence service, the CIA, a monster, he says, created by all of us. Is that a correct assessment, as you understand it?
That was correct assessment sometime back in the 1980s for sure. Not just the United States, but everybody pitched into that effort, let's not forget, supporting and creating the Mujahideen. These are the Taliban.
You'll notice in the clip, David Gregory quickly says, oh, so you're not looking for him, after he says, we know he was your operator. You tell me where he is. You're the ones that lost him. But let's jump to the Times of India and learn about the CIA and the ISI together creating the Taliban. CIA, of course, being our cocaine importation agency, criminals in action. And the ISI is the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency. That's basically Pakistan's CIA, which, of course, happened to be set up and has been run hand-in-hand, hand-in-glove with the CIA. When you hear ISI, think CIA. They both helped create the Taliban, from the Times of India. In a new revelation, Pakistan President Asif Ali Zardari has said that the CIA of the United States and his country's ISI together created the Taliban. I think it was part of your past and our past, and the ISI and the CIA created them together. In the interview, which was given to NBC on May 7th, Zardari also accused the U.S. of supporting the military rule of Pervez Musharraf, who was alleged to be taking sides of the Taliban. He disagreed with the popular belief in the U.S. that the Pakistan military and intelligence services still have sympathies for the Taliban. I think General Musharraf may have had a mindset to run ahead and hand with the hound, but certainly not on our own watch. We don't have a tough process at all. Asked about the influential role of the Pakistan Army, Zardari said he's in control of everything in the country, including the military. The parliament has final say. It's the parliament form of government, and I am a product of the parliament. Earlier, Zardari, in a different interview, has said that India was not a threat to his country and that Pakistan has moved some of its forces from the Indian border to western frontier to eliminate Taliban in its tribal belt. There's a lot in there to learn and read and study, and there's more from ABC out of Australia, more videos from YouTube, and again, like I said, more from Wikipedia and InfoWars and on and on. The flashbacks now. Back to September of 2006, Emmanuel Goldstein, dead or alive. October 2008, former CIA operative Robert Bayer says, quote, of course bin Laden is dead. And most recently, from last November, Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge, bloating in the Deadpool, he was noting the chatter that perhaps we were going to see the corpse of bin Laden roll out right around election time. So, speaking of our latest selection, it's time for the latest on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. More troops, more torture, less change. And we'll kick it off with a note from the New York Times. This, now a few days old, I'm sure the numbers probably higher, but as of last Friday, May 8th, 4,285 dead in a war based on lies. However, don't let that stop you. Obama readies troops as Afghans pile up the body parts. This from Jeremy Scahill, of course, originally noted as being the great exposer and documenter of Blackwater, now known as Z, or XE. He, fortunately, is not hiding his disgust with our phony change agent, as he writes. As rage spreads in Afghanistan after U.S. bombings that killed up to 130 people, unnamed Pentagon officials are still spinning another cover-up. That would be the cover-up that the Taliban blew people up with hand grenades themselves and made it look like it was us who did it. We hit that last week. But of course, define Obama moves ahead with the Afghan surge. Standing between Hamid Karzai and Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari on last Wednesday, Obama said the U.S. would make every effort to avoid civilian deaths in both countries, which are regularly bombed by us, U.S. Although it's not us, we a lot of times make the mistake of saying, no, it's us, it's we. And yes, we are responsible because we are the citizens who haven't done enough to stop this bullshit. The other thing is that it's not really us. We've been hijacked. Mayday, mayday, mayday. But as he was making those remarks, Defense Secretary Robert Gates was arriving in Kabul on Wednesday to, quote, make sure that preparations were moving forward for the troop increase and that soldiers and Marines were getting the equipment they needed. That's from the Washington Post. Jeremy Scahill noting Obamasaya readying more troops for the Afghan surge as the bodies pile up. Reuters notes, a huge U.S. camp has arisen in the Afghan desert of death. But as we've mentioned, as we've hit now on the front page of Google News, but of course, a lot of times you get it first from MediaMonarchy.com by way of the Washington Post several days ago. Now, several days ago, a week ago, Obama set to revive military commissions. The Obama administration is preparing to revive the system of military commissions established at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, under new rules that would offer terrorism suspects greater legal protections, so said Gov officials. The rules would block the use of evidence obtained from coercive interrogations, tighten the admissibility of hearsay testimony, and allow detainees greater freedom to choose their attorneys, said officials, who, of course, say it along with me, spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. More military tribunals. We've got two pieces from winterpatriot.blogspot.com, thoughts and more thoughts on the war between us and Pakistan. Obama reverses his stance on immigration. On the thorniest of political issues, President Obama has embraced the enforcement first position on immigration that he criticized during last year's presidential campaign, and he now says he can't move forward with the type of comprehensive bill he wants until voters are convinced that the borders can be enforced. That's from the Washington Times, which in a sort of coded way, one, yeah, it's a flip-flop and it's a lie of what he campaigned on, much of we've seen in just about everything else. But he's also saying, I don't have the political capital. I haven't quite had the catalyzing event to try and block off the borders. From the LA Times, memos shed light on CIA use of sleep deprivation, but from thinkprogress.org, Dick may be willing to testify under oath about torture program. Here, let's hold our breath. Today on CBS's Face the Nation, that would probably be Sunday, Vice President Dick vigorously defended the Bush admin's torture policies and his belief that by rejecting them, Obama is raising the risk to the American people of another attack. Cheney said that the Bush administration's interrogation policies will one day be viewed as, quote, one of the great success stories of American intelligence. When host Bob Schieffer asked Dick whether he would be willing to testify to Congress under oath, Cheney initially but then indicated that he would be willing to do so. Again, hold your breath at your own detriment. We've noted it before, but let's note it again, this time from AviationWeek.com. The military black budget blows by the $50 billion mark. And finally, on the Obama Saya posting, more troops, more torture, less change, another update. Again, Obama retaining military tribunals for terrorism trials. Just to bang it in. Obama will continue to use military tribunals to put suspected terrorists on trial. The New York Times reported Friday on its website, Obama will retain the military commissions first established for terrorism trials by his predecessor, President George Walker Bush. Campaigning during the presidential election, Obama had sharply criticized Bush's tribunal system. So if I can quote that old chestnut, he was against it before he was for it. And again, because I'm using some of the slang of the phony left-right paradigm doesn't mean that I believe the phony left-right paradigm. But let's call bullshit when we see it. And hopefully, through all this, you're having buyer's remorse. But it's still, they swirl together. I have a hard time on the site when I'm trying to craft posts that make sense and are cohesive and go together and follow through. Separating the misdeeds of the previous puppet administration with the current and yet to come misdeeds of the present puppet administration. We note in the title of this post, Ghosts of Administrations Past and Present, Tillman, Torture, War, and More. We'll hit you with two flashbacks right at the top. Deliberate and calculated lies about Tillman and Lynch. That goes back to April of 2007. Of course, lies about Pat Tillman. Lies about Jessica Lynch. Of course, from West Virginia. And then we also have, of course, officers blamed for Tillman case errors. That's from March of 2007. But from 2 days ago, in the Associated Press, as well as research links to historycommons.org, as well as more from Media Monarchy, now Tillman's parents want General's record reviewed. I was unaware of this. The parents of slain Army Ranger and NFL star Pat Tillman voiced concerns Tuesday that the general, who played a role in mischaracterizing his death, could be put in charge of military ops in Afghanistan. In a brief interview with the AP, Pat Tillman Sr. accused Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal, M-C-C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-L, Stanley McChrystal, of covering up the circumstances of the 2004 slaying, saying, quote, I do believe that guy participated in a falsified homicide investigation. Separately, Mary Tillman called it imperative that McChrystal's record be carefully considered before he is confirmed. Again, do yourself the favor of getting the background on the Pat Tillman story. Even if there's not a bunch of cover-up and lies, he was going to come back and basically be a big voice for the anti-war movement. He originally joined with his brother Kevin because they believed the 9/11 event and believed that Afghanistan was where we should be, so that's where they went. They served together like brothers. And then he got moved to Iraq, and that's when he started to realize that this is bullshit, immoral, illegal lies. By all accounts, we know Pat Tillman was shot 3 times in the head, close range. They buried his uniform and they covered it up and they tried to make him look like a big hero. More ghosts of administrations past and present. We, of course, just heard the funny little clip of Obama making the joke about Air Force One at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. However, shady background as though it may be, I'm not a big fan and not usually about giving attention to Democracy Now! Or Code Pink and all their sort of foundation-funded left gatekeeperness. However, it's always fun to note when Ronald Dumsfeld is greeted and shouted out as the war criminal that he is.
Here comes the war criminal!
Here's some more change you can believe in. Obama administration reverses itself again and won't release detainee abuse photos. This from thinkprogress.org, and I'm sure it pains them to report this. Last month, the Pentagon agreed to comply with a court order and release dozens of photos showing abuse of detainees by American captors. Now the White House has reversed course and will object to the court order. The president believes their release would endanger our troops, a White House official says, adding that the prez believes the national security implications of such a release have not been fully presented to the court. And of course, Think Progress in controlled opposition, classic fashion, note that conservatives were outraged about the potential release, claiming that the photos would incite future terrorists. Of course, at the very same time, they ardently defended the actual tactics depicted in the photo. So, being more upset at the photos of torture than of actual torture.
You know, up until this time, we were led to believe that the White House actually was going along with those court-ordered releases of the photos. They said it was a decision by the courts. We are going along with it. Now, just a few minutes ago, we got some information from an administration official who says that actually last week the president met with his legal team and told them that he did not feel comfortable with the release of those photos by the Defense Department because he believed that release would jeopardize U.S. troops and because he thought that national security implications had not been fully presented to the court. And so we are also told that at the end of that meeting, he directed his counsel to object to the immediate release of those photos. And again, raised the issue yesterday with General Odierno when he was here at the White House saying that he was making the decision to argue against that release. So that's different from what we were hearing. Yesterday, there was a pullback, Tony, when Robert Gibbs, the spokesman for the president, did not go ahead with the way they usually approach the subject by saying that there was concern by the president. Now we're hearing that last week he was concerned about that.
Okay. Jill, if you would stand by, something tells me that after we talk to Barb here, we'll have we'll have another question for you. And Barbara, let's bring you in. What has been, because I'm gathering that the position may be changing here, what has been the position of the Defense Department on the release of these photos? What are we talking about, 40-plus photos?
Tony, let's fill everybody in with a little bit of the backstory here. This is a lawsuit that has been going on for years under the Bush administration. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, had petitioned the court because they were trying to get the U.S. military to release dozens and perhaps hundreds of photos showing allegations of abuse of detainees at the hands of the U.S. military over the years in Iraq and Afghanistan. The court had continued to rule against the government trying to keep those photos secret. In March, the Obama administration reached an agreement with the ACLU, informed the court, said we give up appealing this whole thing. We know we're not winning. This was something that was a leave behind from President Bush. We know we're not winning. Okay, we agree. We're going to release these photos. What we can now confirm to you is a senior U.S. military official confirms to CNN that in the last several days, in fact, General David Petraeus, the head of the U.S. Central Command, General Raymond Odierno, the head of operations in Iraq, and General David McKiernan, just fired as the head of military operations in Afghanistan, all went to the administration and said, we have concerns. Don't release these photos. The concerns that all three men expressed were that if these very explicit photos were released, it would put U.S. troops at risk, that there would be violent reactions in Iraq and Afghanistan by the people there seeing this being done at the hands of U.S. military personnel.
Basically saying if the people find out what we've been doing, they're going to get angry. Evangelicals wrestle with the torture issue. That's from military.com. And Kurt Nemo notes more broken promises, military commissions, and the photo betrayal. So we've been talking about Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, but now Petraeus says Al-Qaeda's global base is in Pakistan. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Senior leaders of Al-Qaeda are using sanctuaries in Pakistan's lawless frontier regions to plan new terror attacks and funnel money, manpower, and guidance to affiliates around the world, according to Petraeus, who oversees the wars in Afghan-Iraq. And he said in an interview that Pakistan has become the nerve center of Al-Qaeda's global operations, allowing the terror group to reestablish its organizational blobbity bullshit. We told you Pakistan was going to replace Iraq, and now we see it. I don't have a crystal ball. There's an interesting clip of Jesse Ventura on Larry King where he offers to waterboard Cheney, and of course notes that it's basically drowning. It is torture. Not exactly the most hardcore Jesse Ventura that I'd like to see. That is the thing that's sometimes difficult, and we here in the so-called truth movement get really excited by folks like Ron Paul and Jesse Ventura, as we should. But we see that they definitely sometimes play to the audience they're in front of. So when they get on, you know, with Alex Jones or what have you, they'll talk about false flag terror, but when they get on with Larry King, yeah, not so much. Pipelinistan, everything you ever wanted to know about oil, gas, Russia, China, Iran, Afghanistan, and the Obama administration, that is from Alternet. Lastly, the update. Posted at the bottom of Ghosts of Administration, Past and Present, Tillman Torture War and More. Again, we note, Pelosi says, the CIA misled me on torture. Because they've always been so trustworthy before. From McClatchy, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi charged Thursday that U.S. intel officials had misled Congress about the use of torture on terrorism suspects. The California Democrat recalled a September 2002 briefing in which the only mention of waterboarding at that briefing was that it was not being employed. But we also now know that techniques including waterboarding had already been employed and that those briefing me in September 2002 gave me inaccurate and incomplete information. That's just about going to do it for episode 123 from MediaMonarchy.com, May 15th, 2009. However, we are not going to get out of here without mentioning the latest annual meeting of the secretive military media industrial entertainment complex. Again, we noted the roundtable groups, Bilderberg, Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Club of Rome, high atop the pyramid, if you will. They get it together. They send it down to folks like the Council on Foreign Relations. That gets seated in all academia and mainstream media, and they mockingbird it out. The latest episode, The Return from James Corbett and CorbettReport.com, episode 85, Bilderberg 2009, where he notes, it's spring once again, meaning the annual elite conclave known as Bilderberg is upon us. In episode 85, James Corbett goes over the conference where the elite decide how the world will unfold for the upcoming year. I don't have time to go into all the times we get the leaked information from the Bilderberg meeting and say, well, whether they were going to hold off on the Iraq War, which they did. That gas was going to go up, which it did. And all these things that come out that later become policy. It's set and talked about secretively at the Bilderberg meetings. Featuring all your favorite elite inbred bastards. CIA, military, money, banking, media, the heads of Washington Post, Google. But we've got a flashback all the way back to 1955, where the documents, by way of WikiLeaks, you can download the PDF, read the actual documents for yourself from 1955, outlining the plan for the euro. Global currency. There's a quick extract from one of the interviews that James Corbett did for episode 85, Bilderberg 2009. He talks to Jim Tucker of American Free Press. He has been following Bilderberg perhaps longer than anyone else. Tony Gosling, who runs Bilderberg.org, and Daniel Estelin, author of Club Bilderberg. From, I should note, Chris Milligan and Trine Day Press, right out of here in Oregon. So on this clip, Jim Tucker on Bilderberg 2009, veteran Bilderberg reporter and researcher Jim Tucker of AmericanFreePress.net talks about Bilderberg 09 and some of the subjects that will likely be up for discussion. That clip and, of course, that whole episode 85 from Corby Report are available for you. However, we just have time to hit some of the few updates I have for you at this point on Bilderberg 2009. Of course, I'm sure we will have much more next week. But we've got mystery group in the driving seat. That is from theindependent.ie. And they post a letter. If the finance minister really wants to know the depth of this global economic firestorm, all he has to do is ask the people who created it. About 150 of the world's most influential power brokers in government, industry, banking, media, and academia are meeting from May 14th to the 17th at the Nafsiska Astir Palace Hotel near Athens, Greece. The group is called the Bilderberg Group and operates under the Chatham House rules, meaning that no details whatsoever of what has been discussed can ever be leaked to the media. That's a letter bravely printed by The Independent from John Finnegan. Independent.ie. Geithner to take orders from global elite at Bilderberg? But we also have shadowy Bilderberg group meet in Greece, and here's their address. This is from The Times Online. Again, more mainstream coverage. More and more, over the last several years, the alternative media exposing Bilderberg, forcing them, if you'll recall last year, first time ever, actually putting out a press release. So to go from something that when you talk about it is a coup detector and it doesn't exist, and you're a crazy conspiracy theory, to them putting out press releases, I'd say we've made some progress in exposing this. Now, of course, when I mentioned it the other day to a friend at work, he said, "All the guys out in the woods, I know that's Bohemian Grove." And again, I realize to outsiders or even somewhat outsiders, it can all seem a little ridiculous in a big juggling jumble of mess Bohemian Builder. What? But if you take some time, you will see. Are the people who really run the world meeting this weekend? That's from Haaretz out of Israel. The rich, shadowy Bilderberg group. That's from the Globe and Mail. We also have a series of articles, and there's also interviews with Alice Jones from Charlie Skelton, a writer and blogger for The Guardian. He has a list of articles. He has been arrested already following Bilderberg. He's just a regular guy, and that's maybe why The Guardian sent him. So he could go and say, "Oh, it's not much ado about nothing." But he found himself detained, and he now has a slew of articles that started out saying, "In pursuit of the world's most powerful cabal," but ended up with, "I'm ready to lose control, but they're not. They're watching and following me." That's Charlie Skelton from The Guardian, writing dispatches at the Bilderberg. And again, there's an article mentioning how he was detained for taking a photo of the seaside view near the hotel. But, a good update. Jim Tucker, yesterday, confirms Timothy Geithner's presence at Bilderberg. Intrepid Bilderberg investigator and reporter Jim Tucker of the American Free Press confirms U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner will attend this year's Bilderberg meeting in Athens, Greece. Geithner's presence will be in violation of the Logan Act, intended to prohibit American citizens without authority from interfering in relations between the U.S. and foreign governments. Congress established the Logan Act in 1979. The only Logan Act indictment occurred in 1803. So, 1799, I'm sorry. Dyslexic. The only Logan Act indictment occurred in 1803. It involved a Kentucky newspaper article that argued for the formation in the western United States of a separate nation allied to France. No prosecution followed. Tucker told InfoWars that Geithner will attend the secretive meeting to talk about global government. Geithner recently announced while addressing the Council on Foreign Relations that he supported a proposal to replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency with a composite of currencies that would be managed by the International Monetary Fund. I believe before this confirmation came of Geithner being at Bilderberg, and hopefully we'll see a photo of him riding all slunk down in the back of a limo, slinking in, as hopefully large groups of people shout and yell at him. As we approach these events, a lot of times, these secretive meetings, if you look at your Congress critters or your elected or unelected or selected leaders, you'll sometimes find strange gaping holes in their publicly available schedules. One, you should check out the Obama Deception documentary anyway, but you should extra check it out for the reminder, if you'll recall, last year, when the Bilderberg meeting was in Chantilly, Virginia, one time it's in a Western capital, or near one, and the next year it's in a Euro capital. So last year it was in Chantilly, Virginia. Do you remember when the White House press corps, or rather just the campaign press corps, was locked on Obama's airplane and took off and they didn't know he wasn't on it until it took off and they were trapped? They lied so he and Hillary could sneak away to the Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, or at least a quieter side meeting that supposedly happened at Hillary's house, or then it was at Feinstein's house, and then it was we don't know. Documented story, he snuck away, and the press corps was pissed. Did they actually do any follow-up work to see what the fuck was going on? Probably not. We've mentioned, but let's ask the question again, will Google be in attendance at Bilderberg 2009? They were there before. So, will Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, be there, or will he send a little crony proxy? That remains to be seen. However, the last note we have on the show and on Bilderberg 2009, 1980 Bilderberg documents discuss overpopulation. During a discussion at the 1980 Bilderberg Conference in Aachen, West Germany, one participant stood up to make his case for depopulation in the Third World. Again, you can download this from WikiLeaks, PDF form, it's there for you, in their small yet hopefully growing archive of leaked Bilderberg documents. Quote, the speaker, a German participant, went on to say that the leaders of the LDCs understood that the oil price explosion had hurt the Third World much more than the industrialized countries, and they were beginning to see that they did not have at all the same interests as the oil-producing countries. What they did not fully, perhaps, understand was what a menace the population explosion was to their countries. It seemed that no one wanted to tell them that, neither the Catholic Church nor the others. It would be nearly impossible to feed and employ the future world population at the rate it was growing. This had to be faced seriously. It could not be solved by talking about gadgets and gimmicks. But his fellow transnationalists are more patient than the German participant. They work towards a clearly defined objective to reduce the Earth's population in an orderly fashion. The global warming and climate change propaganda machine has been warmed up carefully in a also carefully planned stage of succession. The frog boil. The gadgets and gimmicks the Bilderberger referred to in the 1980 get-together were already in place during the 70s and the beginning of the 80s and were expected to be expanded with painstaking accuracy by the global elite in the years and decades to come. To tackle the population problem and convincingly manufacture an ongoing crisis in order to justify their plans, they would have to find some pretext, any pretext, on the condition that it superseded nation-states for their own transnational designs. Council on Foreign Relations head Richard N. Haass offers an insight into the true objective of the environmental argument in a 1991 Club of Rome document, link for you to download and read, The First Global Revolution. Quote, the common enemy of humanity is man. In searching for a common enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. I've said it before. I'll say it again. There is a conspiracy. But it's not a theory. I believe it was J. Edgar Hoover that said the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. And with that note, we'll take the quick glance at the list. Always interesting, always giving you an insight into who's interested in what. The creepy customers visiting MediaMonarchy.com, tracking them by their ISP. The city and county of Denver, out of Colorado, Google, buy a copy of the Evil Blue Horse. They're, of course, talking about the statue at the New World Airport. You know that statue that, while its creator was building it, a piece fell on him and killed him? It now stands sentinel outside the New World Airport in Denver, Colorado. We had Name Intelligence Incorporated out of Bellevue, Washington. We had the Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola reading about Pentagon propaganda. Everyone understands the Pentagon spreads propaganda. We had Fort Meade, Google, Reserve Mill Tech Rules. We had the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. They were reading about and hopefully listening to Episode 85 of the Corbett Report, Bilderberg 2009. The University of Buckingham Googled Oklahoma City bombings and Columbine similarities. The European Central Bank Googled Indie Media, Bilderberg 2009. Raytheon out of Dallas Googled University of Michigan VisiBuilding, SAIC. VisiBuilding, of course, being the ability to monitor people inside buildings. So when you see Raytheon and SAIC being involved in that, you should be very concerned. American Media, out of Boca Raton, Florida. You may know them as being the heads of things like, what is it, National Enquirer and the tabloids and the like. However, you'll notice, one, they don't really get sued all that often, which is interesting to note, because if it were always flagrant, blatant libel and lies, they would be sued into oblivion. If you'll also recall, they were the only media organization to receive anthrax letters. West Virginia Department of Education out of Charleston Googled West Virginia Silver Bridge Disaster Mothman Conspiracy. Fort Leavenworth, reading about in Hard Times, some flirt with survivalism. The Deutsche Bank Googled Bilderberg 2009. USAR.Army.mil Googled Vibrant Response 2009. Navy Network Information Center out of Alexandria, Virginia, was visiting multiple times. The National Institutes of Health out of Frederick Googled Conan Michelle Yao Smuggling. That's, of course, the guy coming from Canada, coming to work for the National Institutes of Health. And he just, you know, thought he'd bring some vials used in Ebola and AIDS research across the border with him. U.S. House of Representatives out of Manassas Googled Daily Show Killer Robots. We hit that a couple months ago, those adorable killer robots. The U.S. Senate Sergeant-at-Arms Googled Iraq Firefighters Karmat Ali. DARPA was visiting. The Sound of Hope Radio Network out of Toronto was visiting. The New York State Department of Transportation Googled Bilderberg 2009. And finally, the National Association, NACDL.org, out of Washington, D.C., Googled Falcon Virgo 09. That was, of course, the military running air terror drills over Washington, D.C. early this morning on May 15th, 2009. And that's how we're going to have to leave episode 123 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, and as we were listening to that last clip, I wanted to make the note that, as, of course, the more things, quote-unquote, change, the more they stay the same, that, as Clyde Lewis notes, that it's not red state versus blue state, it's the state versus you. But, of course, the way we typically end these shows, my friends, I remind you, like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.